number 88. Welcome to These Fantastic Worlds, the science fiction and fantasy podcast by Jake Jackson. This week's episode is another story from the distant future, where huge energy harvesters have caused the collapse of a whole star system, and a mother's attempt to rescue her son, abandoned still on her home planet. It's called Quantum Police. Adia had lost count of the number of time jumps she'd taken to be here. Exhaustion showed in her narrowed eyes, now lost of their youthful vitality, in her long search for her son. She knew the Quantum Police, the Quants, would be close behind, keeping track of her time signature, following her through before she could erase her trail. So she must check coordinates and move on. On her belt, she gripped the tiny sphere that propelled her through time, harvesting just enough energy from the air around her to move her to the next location, this time much closer to where she needed to be. Her left hand twisted the sphere, pulled the energy in, shut it off, and then she spun her hand back, opening a slit of light in the air before her, and she slithered through, looking at the dark shadows around, found a metal staircase, and ran up and stared back down. She had just enough time to cast another time jump, a few feet beyond the one she'd run away from. And as she watched, three Quants dived out of the fading time flare and chased through the decoy she'd placed. She sighed. She'd bought herself some respite and slid to the metal floor at the top of the staircase and caught sight of her reflection in the dull metal. Her afro was still tied back, her long bony features still betraying the defiance of her years of searching. She leaned back and knocked her head on the metal wall, the sound resounding around what she now realised to be a huge disused warehouse. Her eyes grew accustomed to the darkness, and she saw vast looming shapes of machines long idle in the age of quantum intelligence and the restrictions on energy. She allowed herself to remember the last conversations with her partner, Bree, and their son. "Go now, while you have the chance," Bree had shouted at her, pushing her out of the dome. "I can't leave you. I can't leave Cyrus. You must. Otherwise we'll all die. And what's the point of that? You go then. I can't. You know that," Bree shouted back, gesturing at her injured metal leg. "I can't time jump. The metal would blow the magnetic field. I know. I know." I remember screaming at her, tears flooding down our cheeks, pushing and holding each other. She pressed a tiny sphere into my chest. "Look, it's here. You must go." The last remaining flight out of the planet hovered just below our dome, the countdown visible on its turtle-shaped hull. I submitted to Bree's final shove and fell towards the open cabin below. "Tell Cyrus I'll do everything I can to return for him," I shouted up. "And me?" Bree looked dismayed. "Yes, yes, and you," I cried and laughed and cried again as the craft lifted up, carrying the last rescuable citizens from the planet, through the crumbling organic skyfields, the shattered defence shields floating hopelessly around us. I remember picking myself from the floor of the cabin, crawling to the last cryo unit, and holding the sphere to my chest as I plunged into a nightmare sleep of 100 years. When I woke, everything was sore, especially my chest, and I found someone leaning into me, wrenching at my shoulders. "What are you?" It was the sphere. That's what they wanted. "You don't even know what it is?" The man, whose blurring shape loomed over me, hit his head and staggered back. "How do you know?" I understood exactly what the sphere could do and damned myself for not hiding while I slept. "A quantum harvester," the man hissed at me. He seemed to be the only other one awake. All the other cryo units in the room were... I remembered the chill in my stomach, still trying to recover from the 100-year sleep, and the sight of the burned and broken other units. "Did you do that?" "No, no," he stepped back. "The Quants."
"The what?"
"The Quantum Police. Didn't they have them where you were from?" "No. But if they were after this, I can imagine what they want." "Yes." The man was still agitated. "To stop it happening again." "What do you mean?" "It was that technology that destroyed our world, our entire star system." "You mean the planetary quantum harvesters? They were shut down, both of them." "Yes, but not till they accelerated the energy loss in our sector. 5 stars, all dwarfed, husks without energy, and then the planets." So why were the Quants here? They could detect your device. The man, still watching her closely, was calmer now. Well, why didn't they take it? They just knew it was on the ship. The cold of the cryo units masks the time signature, but they were called away. And they burst open the cryo units just to find this? She held the tiny sphere between them. They said their job was to obliterate any form of that technology. So why didn't they get to my pod? A different quad team found one in another dormitory. They rushed down there. So, dumb luck then. Yes, the whole deck was destroyed, but the quads, they're still here. Why are you so interested? If they find another one, they'll destroy this whole deck too. Ah, Adia shook her head, and clearing the fogginess from her brain, she clipped the sphere to her belt, twisted it one way, then the next, and nodded at her would-be attacker. I'd better be off then. A small slit appeared in front of her, and she jumped through. She knew the sphere did not store much energy, so the jumps could only be small. It took several goes to move around the ship. Then, over time, from one star freighter to another, as she gathered intelligence about how to reach her abandoned partner and son, to bring them too out of the destroyed sector. The problem was the amount of energy required to do it, the size of which would attract every quant in the universe. Adia looked down from the metal platform, a gantry, she now realised, and regarded the huge machine shapes. Star engines, quantum drives, she muttered. She'd read enough, jumped enough, heard enough from secret meetings and covert operations that what she wanted was a huge source of energy to propel her from her current location, 10 light years from her former planet, to reach Bree and Cyrus. Finally, she had managed to jump into the location of the last generation of quantum drives, long decommissioned in favour of safer forms of interstellar travel, but Adia's best hope. She swung herself down the staircase and strode to the engines, which reached up to the ceiling of the warehouse, 20 stories high, judging by the number of galleries that marked the dark walls. She'd learned that the energy could be parsed into small packets and fed into the quantum sphere on her belt as long as the engine source remained on, assuming that it could be started in the first place. Just as she began to check for the fusion controllers that would operate the engine, she heard a footstep. Stop. It was a quiet voice. She did not reply. She realised she was in an open space, far enough away from anyone, with enough time to jump away without difficulty. Please. The words were delivered by a figure walking slowly towards her. Even in the shadows of the warehouse, she could detect the familiar, simple uniform of the Quants. Don't do this. The man held up his hands. Adia could see others moving behind him. I'll do anything to rescue my son. As she flickered her hand across the sphere on her belt, it occurred to her that this was the first time she'd heard any of the Quants say a word. She shrugged. She knew they'd follow her, but she'd keep one step ahead as always. The Quantum Police watched the air shimmer as the energy was extracted from the waveforms within. Then a single flare of white light reared in mid-air. The woman they'd followed for years stepped in, turned her head slightly, and disappeared. The Quant who had approached her carefully a few moments before and spoken so quietly shook his head. As he and his companions raced towards the disappearing strip of light, he muttered, "Just stop running, Mother. You really don't need to rescue me." That's it for now. Thank you for listening. I'm not going to blather on this time. So, this is Jake Jackson. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.